Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is already a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, and across the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps. 888-710-4ISN is the number to jump on in. That's 888-710-4476. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Ryan Hickey, Hot Take Hickey, is going to join us in studio 40 minutes from now. Dean Thomas will preview the UFC fights this weekend, coming up an hour 40 from now at 4:40 p.m. Eastern, 1:40 p.m. Pacific time. Now, I'm not a big national day guy. There's too many days, if I'm just being honest. There's a day for everything now. But every time I do my Wednesday hit with Hockman, Crowder, and Solana on 560 WQAM in Miami, they always celebrate those days. Today is a special national day, which I'm surprised today is the day for it. I would think it would be another day. Stu, do you have any idea what is the national day today that we celebrate?
I have no idea.
Samter, would you like to take a guess?
National Dog Day.
Close. Not roof, roof.
Oh, National Cat Day.
Not meow. You guys are getting further and further away. You are now with animals. That is not where you want to go.
National Hot Dog Day.
That would be correct. Now, wouldn't you think, and I know that it's 4th of July, but wouldn't you think when you have the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest on 4th of July, that 4th of July would share National Hot Dog Day? Wouldn't you think that, Samter?
I feel like National Hot Dog Day was just made by Big Hot Dog in order to help sales after the 4th of July holiday, in which case everyone eats 97% of their hot dogs on that one day.
Now, big topic of conversation. Just yes or no, we'll go around the room.
Ranch on my hot dog, absolutely.
Okay, you could leave.
I know what you're going to ask, I'm going to say no.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No, it is not a sandwich.
No, it's not. But you have to determine what...
Well, who are you, Skip Bayless Samter? You agree with Stu. It's okay to agree with Stu. We don't have to do these contrived radio debates.
No, I've had this conversation so many times. It's not a sandwich because just in my head, it's not a sandwich. But by definition, it is a sandwich.
No, it's not.
A sandwich is...
It's a hot dog. A sandwich to me is like turkey.
To you, yes.
Salami. You know, even... A cheesesteak, I would consider a sandwich in some regard. A hot dog, no. That to me is not a sandwich whatsoever. But it is National Hot Dog Day, so congratulations if you do celebrate. A few years ago, they wanted me to go on the streets and get a New York City water dog. So I told them I procured a hot dog. I didn't want to eat the New York City water dog, though, because it's very dirty. The dirty water dog. It's like disgusting. I don't know what
they're delicious
are in that machine that you end up picking the hot dog out with all the boiling water and all that. It's gross. So I went to my local diner and got a hot dog, and I pretended to eat the hot dog on the air as if it was a dirty water dog.
Cheater.
And I later came clean on that. So they wanted me to have redemption today, and I told them I'm not eating a hot dog. So I protested National Hot Dog Day. I do like hot dogs. But I'll tell you, if I'm at a barbecue, is the hot dog your first item if you're at a barbecue? What is your first item? You're at a barbecue, summer barbecue. They say, what do you want? You get one thing. What would you do, Stu?
I'd probably do a burger.
Okay. Samter?
Probably a burger, but if there's like good marinated like steak tips or barbecue chicken or like a brisket, something like really good, but most likely a hamburger.
Yeah, so if we're going traditional barbecue items, so my non-traditional barbecue item would be lamb chops. I love lamb chops. But a traditional barbecue item, right, if you're not getting fancy schmancy, burger, dog, or chicken. I actually think I would go burger one. Now, if I get to determine what's on the chicken, I would go chicken two. Like if I get to put some pesto on the chicken with some Gruyere or with some, burrata on it, mozzarella on it, then that could make a number two in the hot dog three. But if you're telling me it's just regular barbecue chicken, I think I would go chicken 3 and then the hot dog 2. But if I get to make my chicken fancy schmancy, it would be chicken 2 and the hot dog 3. And I said this, I think it was 4th of July weekend. My parents, they live in a 55-up community. I went home for 4th of July, and everyone was cooking on their barbecues. And one couple was making pizzas on the barbecue. My dad was making those chicken sandwiches that I just described. Another couple had kebabs. Another couple was making skirt steak, right? Others were just doing burgers. And then we were talking about these hot dogs that my Uncle Gary used to get from Boston that were like these massive hot dogs, like the biggest hot dogs I've ever seen. And supposedly, it's a certain cut of a hot dog. I forget what the name is. And they sell them in Syosset. And one of their neighbors just so happened to be cooking those hot dogs, and they paraded me over a hot dog. So that night, I had the chicken, I had the pizza, and I had the hot dogs. That's a good barbecue night. That's a really solid barbecue. But anyway, you talk about all these things. You know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of baseball. Because I think what's the best part about going to the baseball game, Stu? If you go to a baseball game, what do you think is your favorite part of the baseball game?
Probably beer and hot dogs, I would say.
Okay, Samter?
Buy me some peanut and Cracker Jacks. Cracker Jacks. It's the only time I ever eat Cracker Jacks.
I'm not a big Cracker Jack guy, but I do like peanuts. There's no doubt about that at a baseball game, just cracking those open and eating them. Very tasty. It's funny. None of us had actually watching the baseball game, which is not good for Major League Baseball. I'm about to praise Major League Baseball in a second. So Rob Manfred, don't call line one and start saying, oh, here's Zach Gell bitching about baseball again. And by the way, I have a partial season ticket planned for the Mets this year, so I'm allowed to complain about baseball if I am. But the problem with baseball, like I go to a football game, I don't think it's long. I go to a basketball game, you know, sometimes it can get a little slow, but I don't think it's long. A hockey game is definitely not long. But baseball could really drag out. And I often find myself, as I have this 20-game plan for the Mets this year, you know, after like 4 or 5 innings, and I didn't used to be that way. I used to be like, get to the stadium early, get my concession item, sit, and don't leave my seat for 9 innings, right? Or whenever the game ends. But recently, like in the 4th inning, I've been delaying my food. I get my food in the 4th inning, and then I take a lap or two around Citi Field and just watch the game as I'm walking around the stadium. But yeah, the ballpark food is no doubt about it, I think, the best part about going to a baseball game. And, like, in all regards, I know Citi Field has good ballpark food, but considering to normal good food, yeah, ballpark food, we do overrate ballpark food, but there's just something about going to a baseball game, grabbing a beer, and then walking around the stadium and just getting food item for food item. And a lot of those food items you could get, whether it's a chicken sandwich, whether it's a burger, whether it's a hot dog, whether it's a sausage, or like a steak sandwich or something like that at some of these baseball games, which are absolutely delicious. So let's start with baseball here. I'm going to start off complimenting Major League Baseball. My expectation for the All-Star game last night was tune in to see Tarek Skubal go up against Shohei Ohtani and Paul Skenes go up against Aaron Judge and then turn off the game and do whatever I wanted to do on my Tuesday night. But I did stay around. Now, I was in and out of the game. Like, I was watching the game, but I wasn't glued to the game. And it looked like the NL was going to run the American League right out of the ballpark in Atlanta. But then the AL came back. I thought Dave Roberts, by the way, horrible decision in the 9th. How do you not just go to Diaz right away? But he didn't do that. And the next thing you know, we had extra innings. Now, let's be honest here. Samter, did you know, when the All-Star game was tied, that they changed this rule and it was going to go into a swing-off, which is just a new home run derby? Did you know that was a thing?
I did, but I it was a vague memory. Like
when you're sitting there in the 9th and it's a tie game, are you sitting there saying, oh, the swing-off is coming up next?
No, but once they mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, of course, because I remember reading about it.
Okay, Stu?
First I've heard about it.
I'm going to be honest too. I had no clue that was a thing either. I didn't. And the players isn't. Who was it? The Marlins player. Stowers, however you say his name. He's on my fantasy baseball team, so I should know how to pronounce his name. But I guess they have to give the lineup before the game of the 3 batters that they're going to have. And because of an injury, he was inserted into the lineup. And he had no clue, no preparation, and he didn't even know that this was a thing. It was almost very Donovan McNabb tying in football is actually a possibility sort of thing. Just the All-Star game really doesn't count, and a regular season game for the Philadelphia Eagles way back when does count. But I thought that was pretty cool last night. Now, I tweeted this out in the moment, and now, like every Tom, Dick, and Harry that pretends to be so smart, 15 hours after the fact, they now have to tweet me today at Zach Gelb. Oh, well, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, they already left the building. Did anyone know that Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani were already gone from the building when that swing-off happened after we retired after 9? I didn't. Fox didn't say it. And I'm sitting there in the moment saying Rob Manfred has to run on the field and say Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, yank both of them, and say you guys got to participate in this. But I guess they were already gone and traveling back to go enjoy their day off before, or 2 days off, before the baseball season picks back up. But that to me is lame. You're in the All-Star game. If you don't want to make the commitment for the full game, even though you get pulled, like at least be there and support your teammates or your fellow members in your league. Like Shohei Ohtani leaving before the game ends, Aaron Judge leaving before the game ends. I know their night is done unless if you have this swing off. And it was a cool opportunity for Major League Baseball. I will say I enjoyed it. But the fact that we didn't have Judge or Ohtani, the two biggest stars in baseball, there for that moment, it stunk. You know, I at least appreciated Tarek Skubal. We know he's not going to, you know, participate in that. But at least he stayed around and he came back out in his street clothes and watched the whole thing. And I thought it was cool. And you know what? I'm going to say something that baseball purists don't like. For regular season only, we already had that Fugazi ghost runner for extra innings. If after two extra innings, so the 10th and the 11th, if we don't have an outcome determined, I'm fine doing a swing off in the regular season. Baseball's already kind of embraced some of the gimmicks. Why not embrace another gimmick? And I know that it's a meaningless game last night, but I thought that was very cool. Last night was a good night for Major League Baseball. Last night was actually as good of a night for Major League Baseball, I haven't seen the ratings yet, that they've had in a long time. You had Judge, you had Ohtani, you had Skeens, you had Skubal, and then afterwards, this swing-off gave you a reason to praise it today, and also the automatic ball strike system. Now, I saw that a little bit in spring training this year, but I think that's really good, and they should implement that tomorrow. Now, it's only the pitcher, the catcher, the batter that could challenge you. You get two a game. If you win it, you get the, you know, you get it back. If you don't, then you lose that challenge. But I thought that was so quick, and it kind of reminds me like when I go to the U.S. Open and watch tennis, and they do the replay system, and it's done in a snap of a finger. That's what I would do. So I thought last night was a good night for Major League Baseball. I also have one more take on this All-Star game. Watching Paul Skeens last night. We talked about this yesterday. The two biggest stars in Major League Baseball are Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. After that, I said, he may not be the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. He could be. I know Skubal got beat up last night, but I would still say it's Skubal over Skeens. Just when you look at also the team success that has followed the individual success of a Tarek Skubal. But you look at Paul Skeens, he needs to get out of Pittsburgh. He really does. And I'm not usually someone that's advocating for a big star to leave a small market. For years, I've defended Giannis Antetokounmpo and have wanted him to stay with the Milwaukee Bucks. When people are trying to get Nikola Jokic out of Denver, I said, no, Nikola Jokic should stay. But when you have a team that's not trying to win, and that's what the Pittsburgh Pirates are doing, I have no trust in their ownership, and I don't see them trying to win anytime soon. A guy like that, with the marketing power that he has, not only because of his individual talent, but because of the fact of who he's dating and Livy Dunn, that's a dude that needs to be on a big stage. And last night he was on a big stage, but it's a shame that the biggest stage that he's going to be able to be on in a Pirates uniform is probably the All-Star game and starting the All-Star game once again. Now, could there be a rare year where they make the wild card? Yeah, but do you ever think Paul Skeens is going to be competing for a championship in Pittsburgh? Not the way this organization is currently ran. I don't think so. And Skeens, by the way, isn't a free agent until 2030. So we got a long, long time for that. And the only way he's going to be off the Pirates if he tries to force his way out. But could you imagine if we had Paul Skeens in the postseason consistently? It'd be electric. You know, I also remember, now Mike Trout only made the postseason one time in his career and he got swept. Remember how young Juan Soto was when Juan Soto won that World Series with the Nationals? I felt like we knew more about Juan Soto just at the beginning of his career than Mike Trout for the entirety of his career. Because baseball, it's rare now that people are grinding and watching all 162. The public does not watch all 162. and they parachute in for the big events. Opening day, All-Star Game, rivalries, Dodgers-Giants, Yankees-Red Sox, Dodgers-Padres, you know, Cubs-Cardinals, so on and so on. You get the point. And then they watch in the postseason. Well, Paul Skenes is one of the biggest stars in the sport, and Paul Skenes will be nowhere to be found in the postseason because his organization stinks. So it's not me saying, get Paul Skenes out of Pittsburgh because I don't want him out of Pittsburgh because I don't want him in Pittsburgh because it's just a small market. No, I don't want him in Pittsburgh because they are nowhere close to actually winning. And I don't think they have a desire to win from the way that organization organizes their operation. So that's what I was thinking last night. Good stuff with Judge and Otani, Skubal and Skenes as the game did progress. You had the AL making that comeback. You had the automatic ball strike system work perfectly. And then it ended on the swing-off. So I'll ask you guys this real quickly. And I'll start with you, Samter. The ABS system, I don't think we need to debate. I think we could all just, you know, I'm looking at you guys. You're shaking your heads. Stu's giving me a thumbs up. Samter's shaking his head. We all agree that works, and that's not something big. Would you want to see the swing-off in the regular season at all? Would you want to see that implemented in some way?
Yes, but not after 9 innings.
Okay, so when?
So, like, have 9 innings and then maybe go, like, 1 or 2 extra.
Okay.
Go into, like, the 10th or the 11th.
Gotcha.
But I don't want games going into the 15th, 16th, 17th on a random hot summer day in Texas in July.
Would you put a cutoff on it? Like, in the last week of the season, would you say no swing-offs, you just play the game and games until you drop?
No, I would say all throughout the regular season, it's the same. Postseason, you can get rid of it.
Yeah, I would think that's fine. Stu?
Yeah, similar to what you said, I think I would do 2, maybe 3 innings of the Ghost Runner and then go to the, you know, the swing off.
Have you guys ever been to a regular season baseball game that just would not end?
Yes.
There was a run. I think it's when I was doing the weekend overnights. Because I would go to the game and then I would train back to the station and then have enough time to prepare for the show. I got like 3-4 back-to-back-to-back-to-back extra inning games when I went. And it is like, all right, you go 10 or 11 innings out the world, but you start going to 12, 13, 14, 15, or dare I say it, like 17 or 18 innings. It's ridiculous. So that's what I would do. Whole regular season, you do 2 extra innings. I would actually say get rid of, would you keep the Ghost Runner if you're going to go to the swing-off?
I like the Ghost Runner.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, you do like the Ghost Runner. All right, I'm not a big fan of the Ghost Runner, but if you're trying to just end the game as quick as possible, I think you would keep it. And they've already let the toothpaste out of the tube, so I don't think they're going to put it back in. So you keep the Ghost Runner for the 10th or the 11th, and then after 11th, then you would do the swing-off. That's what I would do. And if you want to say, okay, because you're going to a swing-off, which is a gimmick, you get rid of another gimmick in the Ghost Runner, I'm not opposed to it. So what do you guys think? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Yes, Anther.
One other thought, though, is when you're having the swing off, and the All-Star game is fine because you just have some, you know, assistant coach or whatever throwing the ball, it takes the pitching completely out of deciding the game. So I would like to find a way to maybe add, because, like, you know, in hockey,
add an opposing pitcher?
Yes. I would like to find a way, like in hockey, right?
But it's so unlikely that you would hit a home run. Like, if you get, it would just extend it even more.
Yeah, not like a guy up there just zooming it in, but a guy who's up there not trying to throw you meatballs.
Yeah,
some sort of a rule where you can't go full speed, or maybe you're
I don't
guy,
think that it, speeds it up. I don't think it speeds it up. If you're just having some guy throw, like, 85 miles an hour, like, how do you police it and all that stuff, and the pitchers aren't going to want to put more on their arms?
I don't know how to do it, but, like, you think about, like, a hockey shootout, it's your offensive player versus the goalie.
Well,
in soccer, it's a kicker versus the goalie. So there's at least both sides of it going against each other rather than just one side.
So I wouldn't do that, but what I would do, now they had a 3-swing minimum, right? You got 3 swings. I like that. I would have a pitch minimum, though. Because if you're just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and then you could put it on your bullpen coach or whoever to actually put a little emphasis on there to throw a good pitch, and I understand seeing it, I would say each batter only gets like anywhere between 8 to 10 pitches or something like that. Because if you're just going to wait 4 pitches in between every pitch, it's just a little bit too much for me. So I would keep the 3 swings, but maybe cap it at like you only get 8 balls. So you have to pick and choose the ones that you're going to watch. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll do a Take 5 Wednesday featuring the SEC next.
The football season might be over.
What, over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is.
But don't you worry. There are still rankings to be made. So get ready as Zach gives you his top five in this week's special edition of Take 5 Wednesday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff.
Alrighty, here's the topic today. The top five coaches in the SEC only who are under the most pressure entering this season. In at number five, it's a guy that I do think is going to lose his job at the end of the year, and that is the head football coach at Auburn, and Hugh Freeze. He's 11-14 right now, and I'm sure he's going to be in Happy Gilmore, too, with how much golf he's playing these days. But he's playing a ton of golf, and recruiting this past year was fine. They were eighth in the transfer portal, eighth nationally. But for the next year class of 2026, they are ranked dead last in the SEC. So I look at Hugh Freeze. First 2 years have been underwhelming, 11-14. I think at best, they are a 7-win team this year. There was pressure on him in order to keep his job. In at number four, not that I think this guy would lose his job, and I think this guy is a wonderful coach in college football, but last year, you didn't make the college football playoff. And when you're at Alabama, the standard is usually to win a national championship. But if there was a year that you miss out on a four-team college football playoff, and let's say it was Kalen DeBoer's first year, that's not the end of the world. But when you miss out on a 12-team, you're now going to have this crowd saying Nick Saban would have never missed out on a 12-team playoff. And now there's all these reports that maybe Nick Saban is coming on back. I don't buy them. I don't think he's coming on back to coach college. If he does come back, it would be to coach in the NFL. But for Kalen DeBoer, I think he has to win a playoff game this year. To really kind of slow the tide down from working against him with all the Crimson Tide fans and get people to have a smooth sailing ship, I think that you need at least one playoff win this year. And I think they could obviously do that. Right now, I would say they're either the second or third best team in my estimation in the SEC. Ty Simpson would be their starting quarterback, DeBoer said, if the season were to start tomorrow. Inevitably, I do think Keelan Russell could see some time this year and could end up taking over the reins towards the end of the season. But their defense looks like it's going to be really damn good this year. And I look at Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. There's pressure on him because you're following in the footsteps of the greatest college coach of all time. And at number three, it's Brian Kelly with his LSU Tiger family. My Tiger family. Go Tigers. Go Tigers. Yeah, Brian Kelly's in at number three. And I think Notre Dame has actually even put more pressure on him. Notre Dame, he left there, which, right, he did a great job at Notre Dame. Let's, like, not discredit Brian Kelly. That institution, that fine organization, they were not in a good spot. They hired a lot of the wrong coaches. Brian Kelly not only went back there, but it brought stability back to Notre Dame. And he had them in a national championship game where they got steamrolled by Alabama. Stu, Notre Dame, they only went to one national championship game under Brian Kelly, right?
Yes, they went to another playoffs. Actually, yeah. They went to another two playoffs. But yes, they just went to the one championship game.
They played Clemson?
Yes, they lost to Clemson twice in the playoffs.
Oh, they lost to Clemson twice.
Yes.
I couldn't remember the other time.
One was more recent, and the other one was like 2018, 2019, yeah.
So Brian Kelly leaves to go win a national championship at LSU, where three coaches have done, by the way, since 2000. I said that a bunch. Nick Saban, Les Miles, and then Ed Orgeron, go Tigers. But now you're at LSU. The goal is to win a national championship. You've had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Jaden Daniels. You failed to even make the college football playoff. And then last year with Nussmeier, who everyone's touting this year, you failed to make the playoffs as well. So you got to go make the playoffs this year in a 12-team format. So Brian Kelly in at number three. In at number two, it was the man that was supposed to be one of the safest hires when he was hired as a head football coach. It wasn't a matter of if Brent Venables is going to get a job after being the right-hand man to Dabo Sweeney for all those years at Clemson. It was just a matter of when. And he ends up going back to Oklahoma, a place that he knows very well and a place that he used to be at. And so far, he's had 2 6-win seasons. Sandwich in between was a 10-win season. And he's really done nothing to make me think that this guy's going to be some great coach. Now, I like Brent Venables, the person. And it's good to be a good person and people to like you. And you have a nice resume as an assistant. But now you got to go win. And now you got to go make the college football playoff. as a head coach. And it's a 12-team format. Inevitably, it's going to go to 16. You can't tell me, oh, it's just adjusting to the SEC. Texas had no problem adjusting to the SEC last year. They made the college football playoff, and they found themselves in an SEC championship game and in the Final Four of the college football playoff. You get John Mateer. A lot of people are high on Oklahoma this year. Brent Venables, a lot of pressure in on him. And then in at number one, it's a guy that we thought was all going to get fired last year. Now he's back, and he's back because of DJ Lagway. It's very tough when you're out on a coach, then people get back in for that him to have sustained success and for people not to want him to get fired in short order. This is go time with DJ Lagway, and I think there is a tremendous amount of pressure on Billy Napier entering this season. So my five coaches in the SEC that are under the most pressure, Hugh Freeze in at five, Kalen DeBoer in at four, Brian Kelly in at three, Brent Venables in at two, and Billy Napier in at one. Samter, speak now, forever hold your peace.
How about our guy Shane Beamer joined the show a couple times. We had Lenore Sellers on. A lot of expectations. He still doesn't have a double-digit win in his 4 years at South Carolina. A lot of expectations with Lenore Sellers as a Heisman candidate. So
I think this is the first year that you walk in where you expect him to have double digits. I think all the other years, that wasn't the expectation. They were one of the hottest teams in the country down the stretch last year. Where I struggle with South Carolina is what is their ceiling? You know, are they just going to be Ole Miss where they're really good and you know they're never going to win the SEC and you know that they're never going to go to the college football playoff or win a national championship, or is there a different level? Yeah, you do have Lenore Sellers, and this year is the year to go make the college football playoff, but I just look at those coaches. Napier hasn't had success at Florida. Venables hasn't really had success at Oklahoma. I know he had that one double-digit season. Brian Kelly hasn't made the playoff at LSU, and there's higher expectations at LSU than South Carolina. DeBoer's at Alabama, and Hugh Freeze, he could literally get fired. Like, if Shane Beamer this year just goes 8 wins, I don't think anyone's sitting there saying Shane Beamer needs to be fired seriously with South Carolina.
Well, maybe one guy who might be is Mark Stoops. He had a program rolling at Kentucky, 10 wins in 2018, then 8 wins, 10 wins in 2021.
Yeah, had it twice.
Last 3 years, 7-6, 7-6, 4-8. What about the pressure on Mr. Stoops?
Yeah, I don't crush him from the 7-6, 7-6. It's the 4-win season that you crush him for. If you're just consistently bowl eligible at Kentucky, I think that's a good thing. And we've seen Stoops be able to do more than that with the two 10-win seasons. But with how college football is changing, all good things have to come to an end. And we've seen better coaches than Mark Stoops, who I think is a really good coach, get fired. So there is pressure on him, but I just don't have an expectation of Kentucky being any good this year. And I think that there's more pressure on someone like a Hugh Freeze, who hasn't had success yet at Auburn, while Kentucky has had some success under Mark Stoops. And we all know Auburn's a bigger football program than Kentucky.
How about another guy who likes to do a lot of talking, so maybe his mouth gets him in trouble, Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, they lost a lot of talent. I know they have money, but the pressure was on him last year. That's when the spotlight was on, and he didn't make the college football playoff, and they threw that game away up against Florida. I just don't think we're talking about Lane Kiffin as much because we're talking about some of these other schools that have higher expectations this year.
All right, we talked about him the other day. They lost Nico Iamaleava in Tennessee. How about Josh Heupel?
Well, that's the thing. They lost Nico Iamaleava. They lost their star running back in Dylan Sampson, and they're starting 4 new offensive linemen. So we're going to find out. Josh Heupel's a good coach. I don't think he gets fired either way after this year, but we're going to find out how great of a coach he could be with all that he lost and all the changeover. But no, not in the top five for me.
Now, he is coming off a Final Four appearance, but I mean, the pressure, not just being at Texas, but to have Arch Manning now as your starting quarterback. What about the pressure on Sark?
So
not that he's going to get fired, yeah. But you know, to win a title.
Well, I think the pressure's on Arch Manning. Like, I go into the season, I don't say the pressure's on Sark. Now, does Sark have to not call a boneheaded play when you're down towards the goal line and lose 7 yards? Obviously. But you look at some of the other coaches you mentioned, like a Billy Napier. Billy Napier hasn't had success at Florida. Now he has the quarterback. Sark has had success the last two seasons. He won the Big 12 in the final season, made the college football playoff. Then, in his first year in the SEC, he was in the SEC championship game, one of the last four teams remaining. So he's had the success. Now it's up to Arch, who everyone thinks is all that, to take them to that next level.
All right, and last one, I've been going all around the SEC, looking at Mike Elko, 8-5 in his first year with the Aggies. Not that there's pressure of him getting fired, but, I mean, they have expectations, and there's a lot of money at A&M. We saw with Jimbo Fisher. And so if you can't win at A&M, then there's a problem.
Well, I guess in this new format, you could say it that way. But I think everyone values winning a different way. I still don't think we go into a season ever thinking that A&M is going to win the national championship. Even when Jimbo was there, I never really thought A&M was going to do that. Now, could they get to an SEC championship game? That's a different story. But it's his second year on the job. I thought last year it got off to that ugly start at home up against Notre Dame. Notre Dame ended up being a better team than what people thought. I really do believe that Elko, it was more a successful season last year than an unsuccessful season. So I just don't feel like there's any pressure here in at year number two. Alrighty, that is the Take 5 Wednesday. Top 5 coach with the most pressure in the SEC. In at 5, Hugh Freeze. In at 4, Kalen DeBoer. In at 3, Brian Kelly. In at 2, Brent Venables. And in at number 1, Billy Napier. Ryan Hot Take Hickey will join us in studio for his weekly chat next. Update time first. Here's Zach. The piping hot takes of Ryan Hot Take Hickey do not, I repeat, do not reflect the views of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network.
It's Hickey at night, Sunday. I'm combing our hair with moose gel and spray. The takes are so hot, hot, hot. Sometimes it's right, usually not. His best segment is coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey head. Hot takes and hair gel on a Sunday night. Hickey's dropping takes that probably aren't right. Dropping a teaser for what's coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey heads. Talking Penn State while Stu's smoking Kush, but Hickey is always the number one rush. You will nice and more, smacking more sober than Stu. We only joke of us, we like you, but I have to ask, is it true? Is your hair held together by Pace and Luke? Oh, Hickey's takes are coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey Hacks.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sports Center, at Zach Gelb, using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show, we might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. And now joining us in studio is once again an engaged Ryan Hot Take Hickey. Hickster, what's going on?
Z-Man, hello.
How many weeks has it been now since you've been engaged?
Going on a month, I guess. It was June 21st, and now we're nearing July 21st, so almost a month.
Okay. A source told me you guys still don't have a date. Is that information correct?
Yes, correct. We've not looked at venues at all, actually.
I heard, though, a few people have already got cut, though. I have three people here in the office
cut that
I heard Hickey said will not be getting an invite.
How can someone get cut when I don't even know how many people will be invited, because I don't know where we're having the wedding?
You got to tighten up that inner circle.
Wow.
I did some investigative reporting. I talked to one of the 10 Hickey family members that are that are your dad's brothers or sisters. And I said, can you do a little digging for me? And maybe just throw a name out there and see what the response is from Lolly. See what the response is from Ryan Hickey. And they said, Zach, we would love to do that for you. I'm not telling you which aunt or uncle. I'm not. You know, I'm not going to give away my sources.
Good journalist never reveals his sources.
But yeah, but I basically just told you, kind of. I gave you a hint on who it was, but I heard three names are out.
Okay, who's out?
Heard Pat Boyle, out.
Out, okay.
Heard Shep, out.
Out, okay.
And then the third name, do you really want me to say the third name?
I would love to hear the third name.
Rich Eisen, out.
Wow.
That's what I was told.
Three big name hosts on our station. Already, you're saying, according to sources, I'm not confirming nor denying.
Eisen's big name.
Are out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Eisen, Shep, and Boyle. Out, out, out.
Inner,
and I also was
inner
told
circle.
That
very leaky.
I've never heard this before for a wedding invite. Only inviting someone to a cocktail hour. But I was told that just Pete the Body Bellotti would be invited to the cocktail hour only. That is what I was told.
Numbers are
I heard the numbers had to get crunched a little bit, and they had to cut some people out.
You only have so many seats. Cocktail, you can float around, right? There's no assigned seating tables. You need butts in seats.
And I got one more.
Okay.
One more piece of information that I was given. I heard Samter is only invited to the church, and that's it. And he's going to be passing out wafers to me when I walk into the church. That's what I was told.
Wow.
Do they do the wafers at the weddings? No, right?
It depends. You can have a traditional church wedding where, yes, they go through the entire ceremony, including the Eucharist. And sometimes you can do the Eucharist.
Oh, okay.
A.K.A. the wafer, as some would say. If you have it more at a venue, it's way more chopped down.
Stu did text me last night. And Stu said, because
Sober Stew or Kush Stew?
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is why I'm bringing this up. Stu said, can you put in a good word to Hickey and say, can we get an extra order of wafers? Because he may get hungry during the ceremony.
Stu, if you're going to come to ceremony, can you at least lay off the weed beforehand, okay?
Whoa.
Sheesh.
You don't need to be saying the W word.
Sorry.
There.
Lay off the Kush, all right, Stu?
All right. Take it easy, Mad Dog Russo.
Give that brain of yours a break.
All right. Did you like the All-Star game last night in two components, in two departments?
Okay.
Number one, the ABS system, automatic ball strike review.
Love it. If you could put it in tomorrow's game or Friday's game, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
This Great. Is bad. I'm already in agreement with one thing on Hickey. Number two, the swing-off. Your thoughts on the swing-off in just the All-Star game, and then the follow-up is, do you think they should implement that into the regular season?
Love it for an All-Star game. I think it's a fun way to end something quickly. I do not want it in regular season games. I like the ghost runner on second base. I think that, to me, adds intrigue and excitement enough to where...
I'm indifferent to the ghost runner, if I'm being honest.
I like it because it's all of a sudden now you're in a pressure situation. Run on second, no one out, let's go. And so it's kind of like 3-3 in hockey where you obviously don't write in the 5 minutes you have 3-3. You don't always get a winner right there, but it helps expedite the process where I don't think baseball needs a swing off. That, to me, feels too gimmicky if we're talking about, you know, extra innings at this point.
Now, I wouldn't say I could do a better job than Roger Goodell as commissioner of the NFL. I wouldn't say I could do a better job than Gary Bettman of the NHL. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Adam Silver or Rob Manfred, I think I could run their leagues better.
Okay.
So I will give Manfred some credit here with all these ideas that they've implemented. The pitch clock has been successful.
Yes.
Like I said, this ABS stuff, I don't know what's taken so long, but just throw it in tomorrow. And I saw it in spring training this year when actually Jerry Seinfeld was sitting a row in front of me, and even he liked it, or I thought he liked it. He wasn't screaming anything, and he wasn't appalled by it, but you get two a game. If you win it, you get to retain it. And only the pitcher, the catcher, or the batter get to challenge it. And it has to be right away. There's no like, oh, wait 5 seconds. No, right away. And then they put it right up on the screen and you see it. It does feel weird when it's on the third strike, for example. So if it's like 1-2 and then you think it's a ball and then it's a strikeout. Imagine if a World Series ends that way once. That would be a little bit weird. But what I would do if I was Rob Manfred, I'm already doing the ghost runner. So I would keep the ghost runner probably for two innings and extra innings, 10th and 11th. And after the 11th, if we don't have a winner, then instead of going to the 12th, I would say, okay, let's do the swing off. And that's what I would do in the regular season.
I like the extra innings the way it is. I would keep it as is and save the swing off for the All-Star game only.
Okay, SEC. Mm-hmm. SEC Media Days, we're currently in, what is this, day number three? Yeah, day number three of SEC Media Days. Who is the coach in the SEC? I just did this as my Take 5 Wednesday, so I'm curious if we agree or disagree. Who is the coach entering the season? Because pressure is very ambiguous. And you could define it many different ways. We've talked about this from time to time. Who do you think is the coach is in just the SEC that's under the most pressure entering this season?
Can I answer two ways? Because I like the word ambiguous.
You can answer however you want.
I'll say in terms of like actually realistically losing their job, I think it's Hugh Freeze.
Okay.
I think, though, there is a lot of pressure on Kalen DeBoer in a way of... I still think a lot of fans view, and Thomas Castellanos, I think, of Florida State on highlights this. There's comments about how Nick Saban
got benched at Boston College.
But I think he speaks for a still, I would say, large majority of people that think this of your Alabama's like, you view it through how Nick Saban got them there.
Yeah.
That's like no coach, no matter what, is ever going to be able to get that level of consistency that Nick Saban had at Alabama. But I don't think expectations, though, change. And so at least for me, I feel like Kalen DeBoer is chasing a ghost that no one could ever catch up to. And that alone just puts pressure because he's being held to an unrealistic standard.
So by the way, if you want to appease the mob without doing like the end all be all of winning a national championship, bare minimum to you to get the mob like slightly off your back, what do you think DeBoer has to do this year, bare minimum?
I say win a playoff game.
I think it's the same thing. Now, my five coaches under the most pressure, I put Freeze at five. I think he's losing his job after this year. You know, the buyout, 75% of his contract, I think it's like $14 or $15 million, something roughly after
That's
this year.
Nothing in the SEC. Yeah. It's what we've seen for Jimbo Fisher.
So I would say Freeze is five, DeBoer is four, because even though I don't think DeBoer is going to lose his job, you missed the playoff last year in a 12-team playoff. You just can't do that. Brian Kelly was in at three. Brent Venables was in at two. And then I put Billy Napier in at one. Billy Napier, everyone was out on. Then people got back in because they wanted to keep the quarterback and DJ Lagway. This is go time for Florida, so I put Napier one. Which team wins the SEC this year?
Hate to go chalk. I'm going to go Texas.
You are.
Just in part, they have a lot of questions, like with a lot of new players stepping up, inexperienced players stepping up, obviously highlighted by Arch Manning. But then you look around the SEC, everyone. Georgia has a ton of new players. Alabama's got a ton of new players. Oklahoma's got a new quarterback I'm excited for, but they also have a tough schedule. It's like there is so much uncertainty in a large part of college football, but especially in the SEC. I'll go with the best team, most talented team I think that's right now, Texas.
I'm going to pick Georgia, and here's why. In the NFL, the Chiefs may not win the Super Bowl every year, but they win the AFC every year. And Georgia kind of showed you last year what the Chiefs are to the AFC is what Georgia is right now to the SEC. Now, Georgia, I think there's pressure on them to win a national championship this year because you said you were basically Alabama after you had your little run there. And the last 2 years, you haven't won a national championship. You can't go three straight years without winning a national championship. But last year, Georgia was vulnerable, right? We talked about this all throughout the year. Georgia was vulnerable. And still at the end of the day, they won the SEC. So I kind of have that Chiefs feel with Georgia. Who are the three best teams? So you have Texas as your best team in the SEC. Then who's 2 and 3?
I would say Alabama, and I would say Georgia.
So are you souring on Oklahoma, who you were highly touting a few weeks ago?
No, I think they're fourth. I think they have a chance to win the SEC. I think they are behind those other three teams. They have a tough schedule, but I think for me they are fourth and the last team I think that could win the SEC.
Now, I will save the Big Ten preview.
Okay.
But right now, what is your national championship game and who wins it?
It's Penn State's winning the national title this year. That's what, wanted me to say it?
Wait, hold on.
I am going to say it.
Time out. Don't say anything. Can you say that again?
Penn State, look right into the camera. Penn State is winning the national championship this year. Lock it up. Write it down.
Who are they playing?
They are beating Clemson.
And Drew Al is going to have a very successful season, in your opinion?
He will have a very good season, but Penn State's not going to air it. They the best running back duo in the country. They're going to run the ball a ton. They have a great offensive line. He's not going to be airing it out 45 times a game. He'll be serviceable.
And will James Franklin now be considered a big game coach?
If you win a national championship, yes.
Can you just say James Franklin?
James Franklin winning the national title will be a big game coach. Big game James has never backfired as a nickname in sports ever.
And then give me like, go Penn State! Arrgh! Come on.
I'll see you in the national championship parade!
Coming on back, it is the Zach Gelb Show.